Hey, Tacoma. What's up? John Doherty here with Radio Tacoma's Climate Talk, the place where we talk about everything climate, always respectfully and mostly optimistically. So let's take a quick big picture look here at what's going on with our climate. I'm stating the obvious to say that fossil fuels are deeply embedded within everything we do. They are the sine qua non of our world economy, our way of life, jobs, lifestyles, education, healthcare, transportation, manufacturing, security, you name it. Fossil fuels are deeply embedded in whatever that thing is, and if we're not to have political chaos, we have to manage the transition to carbon-free electricity as wisely as we can. At the same time, we have the disaster of greenhouse gas emissions in a warming climate, and how catastrophic that is going to be is dependent exclusively to what human beings are willing to take on. When I say exclusively, perhaps I could leave a little wriggle room for something like space aliens coming down and saving us, but short of something miraculous, what happens with greenhouse gases and from there to the climate is up to us. So we've got this very challenging, very difficult dichotomy. Sure, it's easy to say something like, well, just stop using fossil fuels. For any number of reasons, just stopping with the fossil fuels would be disastrous. For that reason, no thoughtful person anywhere that I know of is proposing that. And it's also just easy to say, well, we should be using green energy. Yes, if we have to have a stable climate future, we have to stop using fossil fuels, and we have to replace them with carbon-free energy. Doing that transition will be the largest and at the same time, most politically, socially delicate task we've ever taken on as a species. And the outcome either way at this point is still very much in doubt. One of the problems or concerns I want to focus on today is the situation of finance. Folks who live in wealthy countries, and I'm talking about Japan, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, United States, European Union, folks who live in those countries are not independent in their lifestyles. They are completely dependent on the economic system that they live within. So think of yourself, for instance. Most of whatever income you have comes from the financial system. Your paycheck, income from savings, Social Security, a pension plan, help from parents, all of those monies are sourced from and via the financial system. Let's say, starting today, whatever monies you have coming in stop because the financial system has stopped functioning. How long could you last? How long would basics like water, food, healthcare, protection from the elements, how long would they last from the time your financial cash stopped flowing and you had to live on what you just had in the physical realm that your own financial assets disappeared to and you couldn't go out and buy stuff? So just in the way that we are pretty much completely dependent on fossil fuels at this point, we are also pretty much completely dependent on the financial system. And as much as we see problems in both of those fields, severe, significant, existential problems, they still remain, and we do have to deal with them. And if we don't deal with them thoughtfully, carefully, we are not going to succeed. So I just want to circle back to the notion of, well, just use green energy. So right now, green energy, hydro, solar, wind, only accounts for about 10% of world energy use. And because world energy use continues to increase, the increase in green energy production that we're seeing is not even enough to keep up with the growth of energy demand. But a little differently, the total supply of our electricity right now, the supply that comes from fossil fuels, is increasing faster than the supply that comes from green energy. Okay, not enough problems? Well, let's consider the problem of the primary sources of green energy in the United States. Wind and solar is what I'm talking about right now. Unfortunately, the places that are good for wind and solar energy are not anywhere near the major population centers. So that means that we have to put up not only a larger grid, but an upgraded grid. Our grid right now is just absolutely not capable of handling the amount of electricity we would need to replace fossil fuels. I've asked this question before rhetorically, and I'll ask it again. How politically popular is it going to be in the United States if we don't do a good job of this transition and we start having rolling blackouts? There are countries in the world right now where they're accustomed to electricity kind of disappearing at a random basis and being gone for 4 or 5 hours. It's because the grid and the production facilities there are not adequate to provide 24-hour-a-day electricity. We live in a society where we just take for granted that when we turn on the switch, when we turn down the temperature, when it's hot in the summer, etc., that something is going to happen. There is no guarantee that that's going to happen. We have to be very careful the way we proceed the transition to make sure that that doesn't happen, because if it does, it's not so bad that we missed some electricity for a while. The bad part is the political backlash. Let me give a case in point about energy location versus the population centers. The Sahara Desert is an interesting study. There's enough solar hits the Sahara Desert every day to provide all of the energy that the Earth needs several times over every day. So it's easy to say, well, let's just tap into the old Sahara Desert there. Well, as they say, not so fast. Between the Sahara Desert and the population centers of Europe where that electricity would be going, there's the Mediterranean Ocean. It's a tough place to cross. There are a couple crossings, but nothing really significant now. So even if we did have all that electricity being produced down there, there'd be no way presently and no way planned really to transport that kind of electricity up there. And the physical barriers are just the beginning of the thing. The political problems are what I would call severe. The Sahara Desert's a place where terrorists like to roam around, and terrorists love nothing better than to find some kind of vulnerable utility infrastructure to attack. And so let's just say that the European Union is getting their electricity from the Sahara Desert. How happy are they going to be up there the next time an Arab Spring or similar event rolls around down there in those countries on the South Mediterranean? So the problems of getting green energy to population centers is a very significant one. It's real right here in the United States and is real in many parts of the world, most parts of the world, I would say. And the fact of the matter is that grids all around the world are incapable of doing what it is that we would be asking if we said, hey, just put in green energy, wind and solar. Yes, there is plenty of wind and solar. Where is it? So once again, big picture, my point is that the problems we are facing with transitioning to carbon-free electricity, carbon-free energy, those problems are not simple. They're not easily solved. And we're making a mistake if we proceed as if they were. Every time an additional appliance is plugged in, every time someone buys a bigger, less fuel-efficient vehicle, every time Amazon sales go up, every time a new house is added to the inventory, and on, world demand for energy goes up. It adds up faster than renewables can keep up with it right now. That's the vice I'm talking about with the cheap energy in the form of fossil fuels. The fuels are just lying around there in the ground to be taken, and there are people to take it, and there are people to use it, and there are people who economically and politically resist the alternative of renewable energy. So is it any wonder that the banks and other financial institutions who live and breathe money are willing to take their bite of the pie from all of this fossil fuel production? So a person alarmed or worried about the climate rightfully asks what they should do. The list of things that can be done is very long, and each one of them is important in its own way. One way is to challenge financial interests that are supporting the continued production of fossil fuels and shying away from investing in carbon-free fuels. They shy away with only vague promises about something they're going to do in the future to be greener. If these financial institutions are sincere, they will welcome pressure from you, because pressure from the public and from customers makes it easier for them to buck a 200-year practice of simply putting money where it brings the most return. So part of what I'm talking about is knowing where your savings or pension plan are, or your church or school portfolio is invested, and taking steps to get those institutions to change. The fewer people invest in fossil fuels, the lower the value of the shares of those fossil fuel companies will be, the harder it will be for them to raise money to expand their fossil fuel domains. Another thing to do is to directly challenge financial institutions, banks like Chase Bank, for instance. So how big is this finance from banks into the fossil fuel industry? Let me just say it's way bigger than I can imagine. So since 2016, the financial system has invested $3.8 trillion in fossil fuel firms. So what's a trillion? Well, a trillion is a thousand billion. $1 billion seems like quite a bit to me. Well, $1 million seems like quite a bit. So $1 billion is 1,000 million, and a trillion is 1,000 billion. So the money interests, the financial system, the banks have invested $3.8 trillion in fossil fuels since 2016. That's almost $4 trillion, almost $4,000 billion. Top four firms in the world are all in the United States. So it's JP Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, Citibank, and Bank of America. So what does Chase invest in? Well, LNG projects, Arctic oil and gas projects, ultra deep water oil and gas extraction, basically wherever the money is. By the way, these financial institutions are those among those who came to the taxpayers for bailout back in 2008. You might remember that. And they've never bothered to say thank you either. And if the bankers aren't feeling any time pressure to decarbonize, it's not the wealthy bankers or the owners of those banks who will suffer the worst of the consequences of climate change. It's the poor, the workers, and more the middle class of the developed world. So I'm talking about you and me here. I'm going to quote a guy, Johan Friens. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. He's from an organization called BankTrack, just simply paying attention to what banks do. And here's the quote. One bank after another is making solemn promises to become net zero by 2050. But there exists no pathway towards this laudable goal that does not require dealing with bank finance for the fossil fuel industry right here and right now. Paraphrased slightly, as long as the banks keep investing in fossil fuels, they're not going to get to net zero by 2050. That it's to say so is just a laugher. Okay, so what to do? So you're alarmed, concerned. Those who are alarmed and concerned must be willing to get off the sidelines. No worrying about what difference do my actions take. There are literally millions of people who are politically active and taking action all over the world. All you got to do is join in with them. Every voice makes a difference. The status quo is comfortable, and the status quo position is not going to change without being disrupted, and that disruption can only come by us pressuring governments and the big corporations to take policy action. And when I'm talking about policy action, I'm not talking about policy designed by the powerful corporations, which is basically the way we do business right now. It means policy based on science and an understanding of the human impact of the changes we must make, along with mechanisms for ameliorating the impact of these changes on those least able to deal with them. Until we accomplish those things, the bankers will have their way. One of the problems I see is that the finance sector can't be trusted to move out of fossil fuel electricity. Their primary focus now and always has been to make a profit. If they don't make a profit, in their minds, somebody else will, so they might as well take the profit. It reminds me of a documentary I saw some years ago. It was a televised interview with a man who was actually a hired assassin. Of course, his features and voice were disguised when the interviewer asked him if he had any moral qualms about his profession, quote unquote. He said that if he didn't do it, somebody else would, so he might as well be him and him get the money. That's pretty much the position that I see the banks are in. I think it would be disingenuous to minimize the magnitude of the problem we're facing. How many people who are listening to me right now would be willing to accept regular rolling blackouts, periods with no electricity of several hours every so often? There are places in the world where that's true right now. What would be the political consequences right now if we started having rolling blackouts? While it's simple and straightforward to just say stop using fossil fuel, if we don't do the transition away from fossil fuel in a thoughtful way, the political backlash will be a problem for any green energy hope for a long time. And of course, there are a lot of folks out there who would love to see that happen. So here's what that means in terms of the banks. We need to put pressure on the banks to be moving away from fossil fuels and moving into green energy. If they start doing that, then there will be a waterfall effect as corporations start realizing the money is in green energy, not in fossil fuels, and they will start making changes based on their desire to make money. As long as we've got the system we've got, that's really what we're up against. So just finishing up here, there's a group recently formed in Tacoma called the Grim Reaper Group. You can find them on Twitter at Grim Reaper Group and find out what they're up to. So far, the Grim Reaper Group has been demonstrating in front of Chase Banks around Tacoma. They'd love to have you join in for a little street theater. I've been participating with them myself, and not only do I feel like, well, maybe I'm sending a message, I'm also having a little bit of fun with my street theater, with our street theater. So check it out at Grim Reaper Group. So that's it for today. I'd love to hear from you, John, J-O-H-N, at ccltacoma.org. And the CCL part stands for Citizens Climate Lobby. Good outfit, good people. Check it out. I think you'll enjoy it. Also, a reminder that this and other Radio Tacoma locally produced programs are available in the archive. Just do a search for KTH Radio in Tacoma, look under programming, and you can find the archive. Okay, here I am once again reminding you, as always, live like the mountain is out. Take care now.